Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, another week of Flames hockey and another interesting series against the Jets. As always, I'm Dan alongside Matt to break down this week of Flames hockey and all the news around it. Matt, why don't we just jump right in? We'll give our thoughts on the week afterwards, but why don't we jump right into these games? Because it was an interesting ping-pong week here.
Yeah. Up, down, down, up.
The Flames played the Winnipeg Jets on the 1st of February, Monday the 1st, and this was a game where the Flames came from behind. They were down 2-0 after the first period. Tanev got his first goal as a Flame in the second. Goudreau and Mangiapane also scored in the game, those both in the third period, to make it a 3-3 tie at the end of regulation. And the Calgary Flames end up winning this game in a shootout, where we had probably, I'd say, one of the better shootout goals I can remember from the Flames in a while. What were your thoughts on this game, Matt?
Well, this was a fairly typical Flames game. They had a all right start to the game, took a penalty, it's in the net. They played all right again, not great, but just adequate, took another penalty in the net. And right there, you're down 2-0, and a fluky goal by Chris Tanev from behind the blue line in the Flames zone drawed the team within one, and then as we always see, this team, when they're down by one heading into the third period, they just pour it on and on and on and on and on. And then when they actually got the lead, then they stopped playing and the Jets tied it, forcing it to overtime.
I thought overall this wasn't a perfect Flames game, but I thought there was a lot to like in snippets. There were certain portions of the game where I could look at a 2-minute section or a 5-minute section and go, that was really a good, you know, bit of play by the Flames, but if you look at the first period, we had, what, 4 shots the whole first period?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like the Flames came out good. I don't know what you thought, but it seemed like they came out okay, but the first Jets power play really got to them and sort of shut them down early.
Yeah, like, I even though the shot total was very lopsided, like, I didn't feel that, like, the Jets were just controlling the play and the Flames were... It's just that none of their offensive forays were cohesive enough to actually generate anything. But, you know, sometimes that happens, and it was more of a frustrating period than anything.
Yeah, no, I think the offensive forays comment makes a lot of sense here. You're right. I mean, the Tanev goal was weird. I thought that both the Goudreau goals and Mangiapane goals were nice goals. And I think it shows, you know, these guys stayed in it. And I think those 2 goals late showed that. And even when, with 1:50 left, Scheifele tied the game up, I thought the Flames played good in the overtime.
Yeah, they were all right. Like, there was nothing intrinsically wrong. It's just, it was frustrating that it got to overtime in the first place, because if they had done a better job, then Scheifele wouldn't have tied the game. But, you know, things like that do happen.
And while you were mentioning, you know, the Flames' offensive forays, I think a big part of the Jets' success here, too, was some of the poor defensive play from the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you look at Winnipeg, like, they're basically an all-offense, zero defense, and a good goaltender-type team. And, you know, they can, if you give them an inch, they'll score on you. And they did when they were given that space. But, you know, if you can limit that, then you stand a very good chance of skating away with the 2 points.
The next game that the Flames played, this was the game the next night on the 2nd. Both teams played their backup goaltenders. We saw David Rittich in for this one for the Flames and Laurent Brossoit for Winnipeg. And in this one, Winnipeg did get the better of us. This was a 3-2 Winnipeg win. The Calgary Flames goals in the first came from Tkachuk and in the third from Tkachuk. So those were his 4th and 5th of the year. I thought in this one, though, you couldn't really blame Rittich for this loss. I mean, there was a tip by Ehlers. There was two blind point shots on defensive breakdowns. Like, I didn't think that this one was a David Rittich problem. And I thought he looked a lot better in this one than he did in his first outing of the season.
Well, I thought Actually, it was the opposite. That I thought two of the three goals were, well, savable, and that kind of interfered with how the team was able to respond. Like, they just didn't get the saves that they needed when they did.
I think savable if Riddick had been playing, was in shape. And I think we have to remember this guy's transitioning from playing every night to not playing every night. And that does do something to a goalie's head and his psyche. But outside of Riddick's game, what did you think of former Flames goaltender Laurent Brossoit, or I guess Flames prospect Laurent Brossoit in this one?
I thought he had a good game for him, but that he's just the adequate backup. Honestly, for value-wise, I still think the Flames got the better end of the deal getting Ladislav Schmid.
I will say that Brossoit has turned into more than I thought he would turn into.
Yeah, same here.
I thought he would be an AHL regular, NHL tweener, but, and maybe it's just because of salary cap era, but I think that, yeah, I never expect him to have a full-time NHL job.
Yeah, and good on him for making a career out of it.
Any besides the goaltender, what did you think of the Flames game here? Any comments on the way they were playing?
Well, again, it was a similar thing. They got down early. They drawed within one. Then they gave up another one. Then they fought very hard and then got the game to within one and then pushed and pushed and pushed and ran out of time. And, this team, like, they really need to have the players on the bench be accountable more so with each other to, like, when they're having issues, like, in the first period, to calm themselves and settle things down, to reset themselves so that way that they're able to re-push against the opposition, and if they go down 2-0, go get that back. And I think this team has a tendency to spiral a little bit out of control until, oh, we have to try now, and so let's throw everything at the opposition, and it doesn't always work.
Trying to come up with an analogy this week when I was talking to a friend of mine about the Flames, and the analogy I came up with is that they swim uphill. They get down in a game, and then they swim uphill, and by the time they actually get to, or not uphill, but up current, if you will, like swimming against the current, that by the time they actually get to where they want to go, they're so tired, they can't finish the game. You know, it seems like, almost like you said in this one, they were pushing, but they just couldn't push hard enough, and they spent so much energy just pushing to get back to zero that they couldn't, elevate themselves over the Jets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've seen this a lot of times, especially last season, where, in the third period when they're trailing, if they could bottle that, then, this team would be virtually unbeatable. It's just that they have to be in that kind of a situation to elevate their game to that extent, and I think the Flames need to find a way to get their players to figure out all the details that they need to elevate their games themselves when they're trailing. Like, start, like, from the beginning of period two and go. And, like, we're not really seeing that at any point.
And the next game is a great example. I hate to say great example, but a great example where you didn't see that. And this was the Thursday, February 4th game, again against Winnipeg. The Flames, I thought, played a good first in this one. They came out, they got a goal from Mangiapane in the first, and then they fell apart, ended up losing this 4-1. I had written down here a very complete game for the Flames. They probably could have had more than one goal if it wasn't for Hellebuck. But they fell apart in the second period, and probably the story of the game at the time, Sam Bennett not in the lineup for this one.
Yeah. And this game reminded me a lot of back in the day when it broke just before a game that the Flames were going to trade Olli Jokinen to New York, but the games, they made them dress for that game, and the Flyers shut them out 2-0. And, like, the team was just listless throughout the game.
I hope nobody would ever remember that, or would ever remind me of that trade again, Matt. Thank you for that.
What, you don't remember and enjoy the Alish Kotalik experience?
That was a name I never wanted to hear again.
Well, anyhow, this game was that similar level of listlessness, I think, throughout. Like, even getting up 1-0, it was not based on, like, the flow of the game where the Flames were just pouring it on and on and on. It was, more of an opportunistic kind of goal. And then the wheels fell off the wagon in the second and third.
Yeah, they sure did. And that was a game that I think, talking to a lot of people on Twitter and in person and things like that, and that's the game that a lot of people realize the Flames are having issues. Like, I think such a big loss. They really haven't lost like that yet this year. But I think that big 4-1 loss, we've won like 5-2, but we haven't really had a loss like that. Montreal's 4-2 win was, I think, the biggest, most number of goals scored against us. And that's the one where people got worried. And even the coach said after that game, it's probably time for some lineup changes and things like that. So I think both externally and internally, that was an eye-opener for people.
Yeah, and sometimes you need games like that to identify problem areas in the organization.
And they, I think, learned something from it, because Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, the dastardly Edmonton Oilers came here for round one of the Battle of Alberta. This was the debut of, I think, everybody in Calgary but you and I's favorite jersey, the debut of the Blasty jersey, which, Matt, I made a note here. They really want to go retro this year. They have the Blasty jersey and the pants are actually the pants from the Pedestal jersey or something very similar. Like, I don't know if they just dug up a bunch of old shells or how these came to be, but it's weird to see two eras of Flames jersey coming together.
Yeah, like, honestly, this jersey would have looked more interesting had they had the Blasty in black on the Pedestal jersey with, like, the white shoulders. And, do a total mashup of that. And like,
I think,
with
for
the
a lot of fans, though, they associate Blasty with black. I'm not sure it would have been purchased as much.
Oh, no, it would have been like a black jersey, but just the shoulders being white with the Red Sea. Like, if you remember that jersey, the jersey had like a red shoulder with white seas on it. So, doing all the inverse of that and have the Pedestal with the horse head and all that. I think that would have been more of a neat blend of the two eras than what they ended up doing. But to me, it looked like I was watching a game between the Edmonton Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks.
Doesn't it look like the old Canucks skate jerseys? Like, that's the first
thing. Well, honestly, that skate jersey is the only jersey that Vancouver's ever worn that I actually like.
Come on, you don't like the clown suits?
Well, that's amusing. That's different. But, for just aesthetic reasons, like, the Pavel Bure era skate jersey was just, like, that was a really nice-looking jersey. And, like, the Blasty jersey is like, oh, well, we just took the skate off and threw the horse head on it and done.
When I saw this, it sort of looked like recycled pieces from various teams, and it just screamed to me, budget cuts in the COVID era. Let's just put something out that we can sell.
Yeah, and I think it made Markstrom feel a little at home, just because he played for Vancouver. And,
but he didn't play in that era.
He actually wore... They had throwbacks with that jersey, so...
Well, Markstrom had the retro pads. I would have to go back and look, but I wonder if those are just ones he brought from Vancouver.
It could very well be. And, not a fan overall of the jerseys, but, for a one-year gimmick, it's fine.
Let's hope it's a one-year gimmick.
Well, if it's not a one-year gimmick, hopefully the next time they do something better. But that's just me. And you.
Anyone who wants to dispute us, remember we are on Twitter, @FiresidePodcast, facebook.com/FiresideChat. You can give us your hate mail if you love the Blasty jersey. I think Matt and I are the only guys in town that don't like it. But
it's one of those things that with all of the Flames jerseys, like the retro jerseys, they're fine, but you could have went with a retro-themed jersey and did something new and innovative while being in keeping with it. It's just like with every part of...
you and I had that discussion. Instead of going back to the 80s, I wish they would have done 80s inspired jerseys.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, taking the easy road, which that's fine. It's just gives us something to complain about. We want interesting.
I do like the white C on the shoulders, though. The white C on black, which we have never seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have even been an interesting way to go, is to, you know, to keep the white C, go with sort of a throwback, like you were saying, almost go white C, because that was the pedestal jerseys with the white C and the different red and the black, and put that on a black jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been just a more fun mash up than what we saw, but, you know, instead we got Vancouver Flames jerseys, and, yeah.
Apt for this year, though, right? The Vancouver Flames, the Calgary Canucks?
Yep, exactly.
Blasty may have had...
Well, you know, Calgary did kind of, like, take part of Vancouver's team.
That's what I mean. It's kind of apt for this season.
Identity theft is a thing.
Hey, guys, when you come over, can you just bring some of those old jerseys in the storage closet with you?
Yeah.
We're going to sew Blasty on them.
Yep.
We were cleaning out the saddle domes. We had nothing else to do, and we found some old pants. Hey, I think we can put a new uniform together.
And scene.
That's right. Blasty may have had some superpowers, though, Matt, because the Flames end up with the, I would say, probably the biggest win of the season, a 6-4 win over the Oilers.
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Connor and friends.
Yeah. Friend. You know, like, the rest of the team, they're just there. It's just a friend.
Well, Jujhar Kara got a goal.
Yay.
I mean, that's more than one friend. And Nurse got a goal. So at least two friends. But we got goals from Elias Lindholm, Milan Lucic, Michael Backlund, Dylan Dubé, which is a power play goal, Johnny Gaudreau, and Sam Bennett. Overall, I thought, outside of the Blasty jerseys, which, again, I had trouble watching, I thought this probably wasn't the most complete Flames game that they played, but I thought this is one of the few games this year where they were ready to play every period. They didn't play 20 minutes every period, but there was no period where they fell apart.
Yeah.
They played some portion of every period.
Well, the first period, they were rather bad.
Yeah.
The Oilers were skating around them quite effectively. It wasn't the best period. They did get that early goal, but after that point, Edmonton did a good job. I think the shots were 17-3 after one. Like, that's, you're doing pretty good if you're out shooting the opposition like that. But
the Flames didn't have the offensive success in the first, but I thought it wasn't a bad period for them, in my opinion. I thought they looked okay defensively. I thought they're moving the puck through the middle of the ice pretty well. It wasn't their best period, but I think that it wasn't as lousy as some of the lousy periods we've seen.
True.
Right? True. I think there was some effort there that, you know, you compare it to other second periods or third periods when we've fallen apart, it was not the worst period we've seen.
True.
And I think this is probably the first real game where we've had depth scoring. Like, you look at the guys who scored. Lucic, who's on the third line. Backlund from the third line. You know, Bennett, who's now up in the lineup but hasn't been all year. I think, you know, this was probably the complete team scoring that we needed to get this team maybe shaking some of that rust off and getting everyone going.
Yeah, and it was nice to see Lucic getting the goal. His 5 points, I think, would rate him sixth amongst Oilers forwards, so, yeah.
When he scored that goal, I was trying to figure out how much the Oilers paid him to score that goal this year.
Oh, I think it's like $1.25 million, so.
So divide that by five, you're paying, let's just call it $100,000 for that if he's got 5 points total.
Yeah.
So just over $100,000 for that point so far, but. Yeah, it's always kind of sweet when the guy that's being paid by the other team scores on them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have some lineup changes for this one, too, before we go too deep with it. Byron Ferrosi made his Flames debut. Zach Rinaldo made his season debut. And both Levo and Simon were out of the lineup for this one. And probably the biggest change within the lineup was Sam Bennett moving up to the quote-unquote second line with Gaudreau and Monahan. And, Matt, you called this last week. You said that, you know, with Bennett probably asking for a trade, you would move him up in the lineup and see what he can do. And it looks like maybe Jeff Ward's listening to you.
Well, it's one of those things that playoff Sam Bennett is a commodity that every playoff team would want. And we don't have to go out and acquire him. He is our player. So, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, it's all about finding the right mix for him during the regular season to enable him to have that successful playoffs and be a valued member of the team. And, like, it's been one of those situations where, like, he hasn't had the opportunity, but he hasn't also earned the opportunity because he keeps taking poor penalties. But he has been better at that lately. It's so, like, hopefully with getting the goal and being on the ice for the Johnny Gaudreau goal, that hopefully the Flames continue with Bennett on that line just for a few games to see if there's a familiarity that can grow and maybe a chemistry that can grow. And like, if
we've
the
seen
Flames
Bennett with Gaudreau in the past, and I've even said on the show that I really like that chemistry, and we've seen it late in the season a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, and it's one of those where, like, if you're going to be able to get that to work, like, I don't think that Sam Bennett's, like, if he did ask for a trade, which is still kind of murky and unclear, like, it's understandable because he hasn't really been getting the opportunities to play with high-skilled players. Like, you know, he's been on the third and fourth lines for the last few seasons, and it's hard to create offense when you make a brilliant pass and the guy that you pass it to flubs it.
Well, let's just pause there for a sec. You said it's unclear, but according to the story that's come out, Jeff Ward asked Sam Bennett at the beginning of the season, do you want to play center or wing? And Sam Bennett said center, so that's why he was ending up in the bottom of the lineup. But I don't know. To me, if you're Sam Bennett, you're smart enough to look at this lineup and say, there's no way I'm going to be a top two center. You've got Lindholm, Monahan, Backlund, even if they were to move Lindholm to wing. Like, to me, the right answer would have been wing right from the beginning.
Well, I think, like, in his mind, like, I don't think he was factoring in Lindholm being a center.
Okay, but even if you don't, you've still got Monahan, Backlund ahead of you in the depth chart.
Yeah, and I think that he was expecting, like, to be on a line with, say, Lucic and Dubé, which was the playoff line, and, you know, something along that scenario, not being on the fourth line with, you know, two random players, and, like, that's just not, like, I can understand his point.
Yeah, though, at the same time, the coach had said all summer he wants to move Lindholm to center, so it's not like that was a surprise.
Yeah.
I don't know, just it seems like if he's upset with his position, he was the one that put himself in that position is all I'm saying. Like, it sounds like the coach trying to honor his wish and put him at center, and that's where you are at center.
Yeah, true enough.
So, yeah, no, it's, I don't know, the whole thing's still kind of weird there. Like you said, we don't really know what was asked for, what wasn't asked for. Let's come back to Sam Bennett here in just a sec, but let's wrap up this week. There's nothing else about the Flames that I want to talk about in that Oilers game. I just hope that this is one they can build on and ride that momentum into the next week. Anything else about that game you want to chat about?
Well, it was good that after the disastrous first period that they were able to bounce back and really take it to the Oilers for the rest of the game. And speaking of goaltending, Mikko Koskinen is a terrible, terrible goaltender.
Got a lot of money locked up in him.
Yeah, and like when your other options are Mike Smith and Stuart Skinner, it's like, which of these really, really bad goalies?
Was the Koskinen deal was done before Holland got there, right?
Yeah, that was like the last thing from Chiarelli.
I would have probably fired Chiarelli then too.
Yeah, it's like, and you're gone.
Yeah, so Koskinen's making 4-5 this year and 4-5 next year. So they got 2 more years of quite an albatross of a contract, and you're not going to be able to move that.
Oh, no. That's a buyout at best. And like at that point, you might as well just use him as a backup and, oh, well, eat it. Just like the James Neal contract, like they're just going to have to eat that.
Yeah, I noticed Neil playing on the third line some games this year, and that's, again, a very expensive third line.
Mm-hmm.
So with that game in the books, if we look at the Scotia North Division of seven teams, Calgary now sits sixth above only Ottawa. We're at 500 right now. 5-5-1 is our record. 11 games played and 11 points. So as bad as we say the Flames may have been, they have at least a point a game on average, which is not too bad. And while that might sound bad to be sixth, you have to remember that we have the set where tied for least games played in the division. We have 11, and the most games played is Vancouver at 15. So we've still got, you know, some games in hand there to make up.
And we've also had the hardest schedule of any team in the NHL.
We've had the least games against Ottawa to boost our win total.
Yeah. Like, we've only played Edmonton once. So, you know, and Vancouver a couple of times.
Ottawa zero.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that if Calgary can get some more games against these weaker teams moving forward, then hopefully they can start piecing a bunch of wins together, because the talent-wise, they should be able to have some fun. It's just seeing if they can actually figure out how to play a more consistent game overall.
And then if we take a look at the sort of player summary on the team, guys that are near a point per game, we have Johnny Gaudreau has 13 points, 7 goals, 6 assists, so he's doing better than point a game. Lindholm, 3 goals, 9 assists, better than point per game. And then the next two guys that are close are Matthew Tkachuk, who has 5 goals, 9 assists for 9 points, and Monahan, 2 goals, 7 assists for 9 points. So kind of the guys you expect to be the top of this team for points are the top of this team for points. You know, if you're looking at the four forwards you'd expect to be up there, those are the four I would expect.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you might expect a guy like Dylan Dubé or Andrew Mangiapane to be close, but yeah, your main guys have to be your main guys.
So going back to the Sam Bennett discussion, like you said, we really don't know what's going on there, and we're seeing Bennett with a larger role on the team. And we saw him sat for one game, and like you said, it's very similar to some things we've seen in the past, and we got a better game after he sat. Not just that trade with Jokinen that you mentioned, but also it reminds me of when Johnny Gaudreau sat years ago. Remember they sat him for one game and he came out and looked great afterwards? Mm-hmm. So I wonder how long we're going to get a really engaged-looking Sam Bennett, which I thought we had against Edmonton, or if it was kind of a one game, I'll show you guys, and then we go back to regular season Sam Bennett after this.
Yeah, and this is where Bennett has an opportunity. Because of the fact that the Flames' only right wingers really are Dylan Dubé and Andrew Mangiapane, who are both left shots, it gives Bennett some flexibility to move up in the lineup if he merits it. And, like, everything is all up to Sam right now. Like, he has the ability to take those next steps. It's just, can he?
And I think the big thing there, if you want those top 6 minutes, we saw this in the Edmonton game, he stayed out of the box. And you and I have talked about that's the biggest, I think, knock on regular season Sam Bennett. I think he can stay in that top six. I think the coach will leave him there as long as he's staying out of the box. But I think as soon as he starts taking dumb penalties again, you have no choice but to drop him to the bottom six.
Oh, for sure. And, like, I think if is able to contain himself a little better, like, even if he takes penalties where it's caused because, oh, he hit a guy too hard or stuff like that, well, you know, those are the kinds of penalties where you're like, yeah, but that was actually a really good hit, so, you know.
Yeah, but most Bennett penalties aren't because he's hitting a guy too hard.
No, and that's where, like, Bennett needs to channel his aggression a little better as well.
Looking long-term and knowing that Sam Bennett asked for a trade, now there's some rumors coming out that maybe this isn't the first time he's been unhappy with his role here. I don't know you're going to get, and we talked about this a bit last week, I know you're going to get the return you want for Bennett mid-season during this COVID season with all the trade restrictions and things like that, but if you're Brad Treliving, is he a guy now, knowing that maybe he doesn't want to be here, that you use for the rest of the year because he's here and he's available and he can do the job if he can stay out of the box, but is he sort of a guy that you're looking to for sure find a new home for in the offseason?
Well, I think that there's no real pressure for the Flames to do anything. And with the expansion draft coming up, like, you could just easily expose Sam Bennett if all you're going to get for him is, like, a third-round pick. And
he's an RFA. You know, nobody's going to offer sheet him.
No. But, like, in trade, like, I think that you'd probably get around a third-round pick for what he brings to the table and, you know, is what doesn't make sense, basically.
I think the big question there, and I think Tree probably has a sense of loyalty to Bennett, too, because he was Tree's first pick. And, you know, there's always something about the GMs and the guys they pick. But Bennett's making $2.55 right now. I don't think you can sign him for that again on his next deal. And I think the big question is going to be, he's not going to be a guy that's going to want to be a holdout. I think there's probably going to be some discussions even before the end of the season of, look, this is what we're willing to offer. Let's just throw a number out there, 1-5. Sam, if you're willing to take it, we'll keep you. If you're not, we'll move you for that third.
Yeah, and I think that seeing what happened with Andreas Anastasiou up north, where the Oilers spent 2 second-round picks and then let him walk, that I don't see the Flames keeping him under a qualifying offer, and I think that if there's as good a chance that he'll just walk away as a free agent.
See, and I don't think they'll let him walk as a free agent. I think there's some value. Even a third I would take for him, and I think it's going to be one of these things that if you think you can get him signed to a lesser deal next year, talking to the agent before deadline day, I think you do it, especially if we're not going to be in the playoffs. I think you have to move him at the deadline if we're not going to be in the playoffs, because Sam Bennett's usefulness is the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that if the Flames are missing the playoffs this year, then I think that you'll see more than just Sam Bennett moving. But
see. If Sam Bennett moved on, would you feel like we'd lost a key piece of this team in the offseason?
How would you say? I would feel that we missed a very important part of the team, but not a vital part of the team.
That's a good way to put it. For me, I feel like we've given Bennett chances. We're continuing to give him chances. I think it's up to Bennett what he does with these chances. And if he moves on, I kind of feel like, you know what? He's moved on because Calgary's not the right fit for him. Yeah, maybe he goes on to do great things elsewhere, but, you know, maybe someone else comes in here and does great things here. And I think that you can't, at a certain point, you can't get, and we talked about this last week, you can't keep holding on to him for potential, what he could do. I think he's at the age now where you've got to say, you know what? It's not a fit here. He's a good player, just not someone we need on the Calgary roster. And I wouldn't be sad to see him go because I want to see Bennett get the opportunity he wants or thinks he deserves with another organization.
Yeah, and I think that you would have 30 teams lining up to try and get Sam Bennett if he is available.
He's not going to be a guy who's going to not get an offer and go over to Europe. He'll get an NHL deal. The question is just whether it's going to be with Calgary.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Sam Bennett?
Just hoping that he keeps it up a bit and might be a little bit more effective 5-on-5 regardless.
Seen the coach put him on the second line. We'll call that the second line, the Johnny, Monty, Benny line now. We started to see some changes to the lines last week, especially that Edmonton game. And guys come in. I mean, we're seeing Byron Ferrosi now. We're seeing Zach Rinaldo in the lineup. Derek Ryan is out for probably at least 10 games or 24 days. So the Flames have been trying some things with the lineup. And I don't know about you, Matt, but I'm not sure that the lineup they have works, but I also don't know if you want to go back to the old lineup. I think that there's probably a tendency to go back to Johnny, Monty, Lindholm as your top line. Probably, you know, Tkachuk, Backlund, somebody else as your second line. Like, what, I guess from what you've seen, if you were the head coach, what would your lineup look like going into, you know, the middle of February?
The first line, Tkachuk, Lindholm, and whomever's hotter between Dubé and Mangiapane. Second line, Gaudreau, Monahan, Bennett. Third line, Lucic, Backlund, and whomever of the who's left over from the first line. And then just miscellaneous based on the appropriate positions.
Whoever
for each
is
of the
left.
Guys. Yeah.
Interesting. I would, and I know that Backlund hates playing wing, but I think I would try a bit of a very different lineup for at least a couple games. I would actually go my first line being Tkachuk, Lindholm and Backlund on the right. I think that Backlund is can bring some defensive responsibility to that line and help move the puck around to the two guys that need it there. I would then go with the second line of Johnny, Monty, and Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no. I would do Johnny, Monty, and Dubé. Bennett wants to play center. Give him the third line center. Put him with Mangiapane and Levo or Nordstrom, one of the two. And I think then you still get a really good third line with Mangiapane and Bennett that isn't just your checking line. And even throw Lucic there if you want to. I mean, that line looked really good last year. And then whoever else you want to put on the fourth. So I was hesitant to say, you know, try Johnny, Monty, Lindholm again because that seemed to work. But I think we really need to spread... We need to spread the scoring out, and I'm not sure that Backlund is as effective as he should be on the third line. That's why I might try him at wing. If we're going to try Bennett at wing, let's try it. I know they tried that in the playoffs or the play-in round, and Backlund didn't seem happy. But I don't know. If I was Backlund, I'd probably be happier there than being on the third line.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see exactly how the coach shakes things out because – there are a lot of different ways that you can really go about everything with the various...
So just to recap mine again, because I know I changed my mind there. So I would go 19, 28, and 29 is one line, so that'd be Kachuk, Lindholm, Dubé, which you're kind of already seeing. Then I would go 13, 23, 11, so that'd be Goudreau, Monahan, Backlund. Then your third line would be 88, which is Mangiapane, 93, which is Bennett, and 17, which is Lucic. Yeah. And then, to me, this is really a three-line team. And then your fourth line is whoever else we have to dress tonight.
And parts.
You know, Ferosi, we're not going to see Ryan for a while. So, you know, I think, whoever else you want to put in there, Nordstrom, Buddy Robinson, you know, whoever else they want to throw out there. But to me, this is a three-line team this year.
Yeah, and I was hoping that some of the filler guys that they came in would have played better, but I think that you might see later on in the season, if like these guys continue to struggle, that you might see some of the kids get brought up and just for energy on the fourth line.
I think we might be surprised by some of the moves that we see with the farm team being so close.
Yeah.
And you know, even some of these guys, like I'm just looking at contracts here, but Levo, Nordstrom, like, you know, I think that if these guys continue to struggle, even a guy like Nordstrom, he's done at the end of this year anyways, why not try waving him or Simon, send him down and bring someone else up just to free, you know, a little bit of cap space. But yeah, I can totally see, you know, just with the team being so close, you know, sometimes there's on paper transactions that pretty much fly to Stockton, report in and fly back. I mean, now what do? You haul your bag down the hall, tag up and haul it back to the regular dressing room. Like, I think you might see a lot more on paper transactions because of that.
Yeah. And I think that, part of the Flames' struggles thus far this season has been due to the fact that frankly, all of the depth guys have played more like your 13th, 14th forwards instead of, you know, like legitimately good top 12 forwards.
Well, and we talked about it. The four guys that are doing well are the top four point getters. And, you know, I don't expect Dubé or Mangiapane to be up there yet. I mean, those are guys that are playing out of position. They're still young players. You know, it's good to see Backlund get a goal. But I think the Dubé and Mangiapane, to me, are still complementary players on this team. And guys, especially playing with Kachuk, Lindholm, Monahan, and Goudreau, they're not going to be the top point getters for this team. But they're the guys that have to be there to support them.
Yeah, like those guys are basically going to be the foils for the other guys. And players that can receive passes, make passes, and, you know, shoot if, you know, like the Dubé goal or... Mangiapane's goals from the past couple games, but mostly largely focusing in on like they're just there, not like they're not the drivers on the line. It's gonna be the Kachucks and Lindholms with an adequate filler guy, and like we saw early in the season with guys like Levo and Simon and whomever slotting in on the Gaudreau line, and like they just not fitting in at all effectively. And I think that that's why it's important that Mangiapane and Dubé get those spots.
I think Levo can still impress. I think Levo more than Simon can impress, but he's going to do it at a third line position. I think a Levo, Bennett, Mangiapane third line could be a really impressive group.
Yeah. Well, like, Levo to me is one of those guys that if, as long as he's playing, he has it, that ability to just all of a sudden take over a play and generate a goal or a good scoring chance. And it, his problem is that it, those things are not very consistent game to game, shift to shift. And, you know, he is a dangerous player, but not with any consistency. And I think that it's hard to have a player like that higher up in the lineup. And so whether it's Bennett or Mangiapane or Dubé or whomever, like there's enough, or Backlund, as you said, there's enough different takes that you can make to,
it just shows the weakness we've talked about every show about, you know, the weakness on the right side. And I guess what I'm trying to do with my lines is patch the hole. You know, like I think that Backlund is better than a third line center. I don't think he's a right winger, but I think he's someone you need to find a spot for in your top six on this team and with his salary and that. So it's like, okay, move him up there and just patch the hole.
Yeah, and like you can get away with Backlund being the $5 million third line center because he is that good defensively. But it, yeah, it's frustrating because this team just doesn't have kids that are quite ready for the NHL yet. Because like a guy like a Pelletier or a Connor Zary might be a fascinating fit there, but they're still a year or two or three out. And
well, that was going to be my next lineup question for you. So Derek Ryan is out. This is a guy who started the season on the taxi squad just because of salary cap restrictions. He's now out for probably, I'm hearing, 10 games or 24 days, probably not till mid-March. If you look in the taxi squad, there's really no centerman there. I mean, we have Buddy Robinson, who's a right winger. Zach Rinaldo is a left winger. They have Byron Ferrosi in the lineup right now, who's, I guess, a serviceable center. But would you just go with, say, Ferrosi or Brett Ritchie or somebody like that and sort of cobble together that third line? Or is now, I guess Ritchie's a right winger, but or is now the time to maybe call up a Adam Rozicka or, you know, Dmitry Zavgorodny to play a month on the
fourth
line?
The guy I would actually select would actually be Glenn Gaudin. And Gaudin's a very good defensive forward who has some offensive talent.
And can also play right wing.
Yeah, and because of the fact that he's a defensive-minded forward, having him on the fourth line is kind of like in right in his wheelhouse. Because like that wouldn't be the guy that you would select if, say, like Gaudreau or Monahan went down. But it, his game is more suiting to that level of play.
Even if Gaudreau or Monahan went down, I think you could still select Gaudin because everyone would just shift up one. So, I mean, if Gaudreau goes down, Mangiapane takes his spot. You know, if Monahan goes down, Backlund takes his spot. And then I think everyone just moves up one and Gaudin goes on the fourth. Like, I can't see, just looking at how deep we are, even on the fourth line with Mangiapane, Backlund, I can't see a time when, you know, Tkachuk, Lindholm, Monahan, or Gaudreau go down and a farm guy is playing top 6 minutes.
Yeah, unless it was Pelletier, and yeah, that would be about the only guy I could conceivably see doing that, and even then...
I mean, he hasn't played for a while. I don't know, I'd want to bring him up first.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of the reason why we didn't see Glenn Gaudin, and we saw Brian Ferrosi instead, is just due to the fact that the more veteranness from him versus the young kid in Stockton is so it, you know, it's just less chance of that player screwing things up.
Yeah, I can see that. So yeah, it's interesting. I don't think I would bring up a young guy right now. I think that the Heat need to get ready for this season. The Heat need to get things going, and I think that I think that you're best to just find that plugger for a month. I mean, you know, Ryan wasn't playing a lot of minutes anyways, and I think Ferrosi is going to be good enough. So we'll see what happens with them during this season, and if they do go to someone from the farm. But I think with the taxi squad you have and the veterans there, I think you'll see those guys plugging in for most of the games. So talking about the lineup changes and Bennett, I think we've really sort of, you know, talked about where the Flames are at currently. But we got a fan question this week on Twitter at our someone tweeted us at Fireside Podcast. And this came from friend of the show, Ryan, at 76 Swanson on Twitter. And Ryan asked, if the Flames continue to be below 500, what will be their move? New player, new coach, new GM. So Ryan's sort of looking a little bit ahead of where we are now and saying, if they continue to struggle, what are they going to do next? I'll take this first, Matt, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts. I don't think a new coach does anything. We've been through enough coaches. I think even if we were to go out and get a Stanley Cup coach, I don't know it changes this much. I think the GM we have is the right GM. I think that, you know, Tree has done everything he can to put the right team on the ice. He signed some really good contracts. I don't know that changing GMs does much. And often when you bring in a new GM, they just want to put their mark on the team. And I'm not sure that does it. I think personally, if they're below 500, it's going to be tough to make trades this year. I think you've kind of got to, I hate to say it, but ride this one out, even if it's a bit of a lost season. And make moves within your team. Put new guys, like, you know, promote guys that are doing well. Even if it was taking Nordstrom, putting him on the first line if he's looking good. Or, you know, moving Mangiapane up there. I just don't know there's a lot of moves to be made. But, and Matt said this in the past, I think this is the last season where we can be subpar. And I think if this is a regular season, you would make moves. But I think right now, you're not going to be able to make those moves with all the quarantine rules. And we're already seeing U.S. teams losing games. Like, I don't think that those teams want new players coming into their bubbles. But I think if you don't see the Flames get above 500, let's say by the end of the season, or if they are out of the playoff bubble, I think huge changes are going to be made in the offseason.
Yeah, it, like, I know, like, some members of the media and fan base are like, oh, trade Gaudreau and this and that, and just casually dismiss, you know, players. And like, with all of this, like, you know, as a Flames fan, period, that like, I like Gaudreau, I like Monahan, I like the players on the team. It's just that on the business side of it, like, if you're not getting it done and like you've changed everything else repeatedly to try and accommodate. And, you know, to be fair, like, the Flames defense core, I felt last season was rather bad throughout the season. Because I thought that Brody was very up and down, and Hamonic was just awful for most of the season. And, you know, it was buoyed by the fact that Rasmus Anderson emerged, but like, shuffling the chairs around, bringing in Tanev, letting Brody and Hamonic go, letting Anderson get more of a role, getting a good depth guy in Nesterov, letting Valimaki play, the emergence of Noah Hanifin, like, just the little things around.
And those are all Treliving moves. You can't get rid of GM at this point.
No, like, they're all just slight moves. Like, in terms of overall talent, the team's defense core, just in the raw talent sense, is basically the same for the defense group. But the consistency in delivering those abilities has improved. And I think that the Flames' defense as a whole has improved, even though, like, Mark Giordano has regressed a bit. So, like, if you're starting to see, like, the Flames as a group struggle consistently throughout this season, then I think you're going to see that same kind of mantra with the forward group, where perhaps guys that have been around a long time, you start cycling them out, whether that's Michael Backlund or Gaudreau, Monahan, whatever, to make it, like, lasting impact and allow some of the young guys to emerge, like a Dubé and a Mangiapane. And,
You said that we've seen Gaudreau sort of, you know, or not Gaudreau, Giordano go downhill, but is he regressing any more than the guy you'd expect for his age? Like, to me, we're not seeing any more than age-related regression. It's not like he's playing terrible. He plays like a guy I'd expect at that age, but the Flames need to make sure, and I think with what we're seeing from Hanifin this year, I think we just need to make sure we have the right guy behind him to pick up those pieces.
Yeah, and like with Noah Hanifin, like to me, I think we're starting to see like the emergence of Duncan Keith. And when Brian Campbell was the guy in Chicago, I reference the Blackhawks a lot just because of the youth of our defense corps and the talent level. And I think that you're starting to see Hanifin take that next step where he's emerging as a top-tier defensive defenseman who can chip in. And to me, he's been the best defenseman on the Flames. And I think that moving forward, if that continues, then obviously Giordano's pair becomes the second pair. And, you know, it just creates a lot more flexibility where you can have Valimaki jump up with Anderson at some point, and even moving Giordano further down in the lineup if necessary.
And I know I talked last week, and I've talked in the past about moving Johnny Gaudreau. And when I'm talking about moving Gaudreau, you're not moving Gaudreau for spare parts or moving him simply to get him out of town. You're moving him for an equally talented player or sort of package of players. And I think that there is still value to moving him, especially if you think that Matthew Tkachuk is your top left winger, to fill holes in the lineup. Like, I'm not saying we should just blow this thing up and get rid of Gaudreau for a couple draft picks. Move Gaudreau for roster players.
It's sort of like the Dougie Hamilton trade. Like, it was apparent that Hamilton wasn't a good fit organizationally, and they maximized the value of that by getting Hanifin and Elias Lindholm. And yeah, they lost a good player in Michael Ferland and a good prospect who didn't want to sign here in Adam Fox, who didn't sign in Carolina either. But, you know, like, sometimes you have, in order to get the good players like Lindholm and like Hanifin, you need to be able to give up a good player in return. You don't see Doug Gilmore type trades where, you know, one team gets like all of the good players and the other team gets all of the mediocre ones. Like, those don't happen.
I think even a better example, you know, in recent memory would be the Line A deal, right? Two guys that just need a change of scenery, and you swapped one for the other. Like, you'll get a high-end player on both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in a hypothetical, you'd probably get a guy like Travis Konecny and, say, like Shane Gostisbehere in a deal with Philly if you're, you know, something along that lines with other parts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not trying to say let's trade Johnny because I think that, you know, the sky is falling, let's get value. I'm saying trade Johnny to get an equally valuable player who fills a hole that we have. I would say that on the left with Tkachuk, Gaudreau, Dubé, Mangiapane, Bennett, we don't need as many left wingers as we have. So move one, get a right winger. Solve the problem that way instead of going shopping free agency. So I just think that when I'm talking about moving Gaudreau, which I still think they should do after this season, win, lose, or draw, unless they win the Stanley Cup, I think you're moving Gaudreau to get value out of him, not just to move him out of town and, you know, take scraps.
No exactly. Like,
this isn't going to be the Drew McGinley deal.
Yeah, like if, say, a team offered, like, the 12th overall pick and, like, two good prospects, it'd be like, nah, not really. Thanks.
Yeah, at this point, I'm not trying to take futures. It's roster player or bust. I don't want your pick in this year's draft. I need a player that can slot into my top six.
Yeah, and like we're seeing some of the younger guys in the system showing flashes of brilliance that like they may emerge down the road as top six forwards, whether it's the guys like Pettersson, Phillips, Peltier.
But they're not there next year.
No, but like that. At least the Flames have guys that are potential replacements down the road in terms of, you know, like if you're promoting, say, guys like Dubé and Mangiapane, you guys are top six forwards now, then you need those depth guys to come up so, you know, you're backfilling the third and fourth line guys with quality young guys and, yeah.
I'm always worried when a team brings up a guy who's played in the AHL and says they're top six ready. Like, if they were top six ready, they would have been here. I think, you know, you need to replace Gaudreau with a top six guy. Like you said, there's other guys that might be sort of ready or almost ready, but you put them in your bottom six and you make them earn their way up. You don't move Gaudreau for number 12 and say, you know, all right, Pettersson, you're, you know, playing with Monahan and Bennett or something like that.
No, and that's where you'd see Dubé and Mangiapane getting like, okay, you two guys, you're in the top six now. Period.
Yeah, but even then, I don't think that moving Gaudreau for a pick and moving Mangiapane really solves anything.
No, neither do I.
You move Gaudreau for a top-end roster player at a different position.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clarify because I did get some DMs on Twitter about, oh, you hate the Flames, you want to move Gaudreau. I want to move Gaudreau to make the team better, and Gaudreau is the asset that is going to get us the most right now. I mean, outside of our goaltender, who we're not moving, Gaudreau is the guy that gets us the most return.
Yeah, and, like, frankly, like, I want the Flames to win the Stanley Cup. Would I like Gaudreau to win the Stanley Cup with the Flames? Yes. But if, you know, it requires him getting dealt to get the Flames the Stanley Cup, you know, not ideal, but it is what it is. Sometimes you have to make those kinds of trades.
You have to give to get.
Yeah, it's like the Brett Hull trade to get Rick Walmsley and Rob Ramage. You know, yeah, we gave up one hell of a good young player at the time, but the Flames won the cup, so it's like, yeah, do you really care? Not really. And I think, like, if the situation dictates that certain players have to go to get us to that end goal, then it would be worth it if the Flames do end up winning that Stanley Cup. But it's not the, like, oh, we must steal him right now just because.
No, for sure. You don't just move him right now, especially when he's the top goal getter on the team. But I think that makes him even more valuable in the offseason if he's our top point producer. But I think that, you know, and people have said, well, I like Gaudreau, I don't want him to go. And I've said, you know what? You'll like the guy that we trade Gaudreau for just as much, if not more. Because if you're getting rid of such a good asset, you're going to get a great asset back.
Well, it's just like when the Flames were, they dealt Jarome McGinley. Like, a lot of fans were disappointed, sad, and all that, but like, frankly, for like 3 or 4 years prior to that trade, like, it would have been good to move on and start a little bit of a rebuild. Like, when the Flames started missing the playoffs consistently,
they hung on too long and they paid the price.
Because, well, what did the Flames get for Ginla? Nothing. Like,
same thing with Kipper. As much as I'm happy he retired here, there was value to be had if we would have moved him out of town.
Yeah, and, you know, like, that, the little things like that stall the rebuild a bit. And, you know, like, if the Flames had just cut bait when, even though it would have sucked to see guys like Ginla and Kipper move on earlier, you know, like, the writing's on the wall. And, you know, like, if the Flames were to trade Gaudreau, like, it's not the ideal, but it's better to do it when you're maximizing the asset.
Said, sell him when he's hot.
Yeah. And it's not ideal, but.
So, yeah, I just wanted to clarify those comments from last week that I don't think that we're moving Gaudreau just to move him because he's a terrible player. You're moving him because he's a valuable asset to make the team better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd be sad to see him go too, but I'd be excited by, I'm excited, and you and I have talked a lot about in the past, what does a return look like? And I'd be excited to see what we'd get back for him. And I think I trust Tree, I don't know about you, but I trust him as a GM. Yeah. I think he's the best GM we've had in a while to maximize that return.
Honestly, I think that Tree's the best general manager the Flames have had since Fletcher, and I don't
That's really, a while.
Yeah. So, like, a few years, you know, what? 32, so yeah, a while.
But yeah, I mean, he's, you know, and I think that he's, if you change out GMs always go through this process of wanting to evaluate everything. I mean, like you said, Fletcher, we had Fletcher, then Risebrow, Coates, Button, Daryl Sutter, Jay Feaster, Brian Burke, Brad Treliving. And if you look at the last couple guys there, I mean, Feaster, Burke, they wanted to go through this process of evaluating the organization. I don't think you have time to evaluate the organization. I think you need to, you know, you need to know what you've got and be able to strike while the iron's hot. And I think unless you were to bring, say, Connie up or Pascal up, and I don't think that's the right move to move one of those guys to GM, I think Tree's the right guy. He's shown that he's done great things. I think the issue's not with what Tree's done. He's put the right lineup on the ice, and I trust he's the right guy to get the right return.
Well, not only that, like, he's not been, like, when certain things become apparent that, like, say, like, when Dougie Hamilton wasn't fitting as expected, that, okay, yeah, we got him, great. now move them out for something else. And, like, when the situation dictates, he's not afraid to pull that trigger.
And he's also not afraid to sort of go back on his own deals. And often we see GMs keep their own bad deals because it's their deal. I mean, if you look at the guys that we're paying right now, Troy Brower and Michael Stone, who we've, you know, bought out, those are both his deals. And he was able to get, he was okay to get out of his own deal, which I really admire about him as well. You know, he's willing to try something to clean up his own mess, not just keep it because, well, I signed that deal.
Well, like even James Neal, like, Milan Lucic, you know, as much as, you know, like, oh, yeah, he's getting over $5 million and, you know, he's the third, fourth liner.
It was the only thing you were going to get for Neal.
Well, not only that, Lucic actually does have a good positive impact on the games. And, like, if he was making, say, $3 million, I don't think that there would be a single person in, that's a Flames fan that would be complaining about that. It's just that, unfortunately, you know, five, but... Mm-hmm. You know,
but again, he found a way to get out of a bad deal.
Yeah, a bad attitude, bad character, and somebody who, for somebody who actually contributes, even if it's not on the score sheet.
But there was a lot of GMs that would have kept that deal because it was their deal.
Yeah, and hoping that Neal would bounce back, even though, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, every GM, no one can show me a GM that's never made a mistake. Even some of the greats, you know, Ken Holland when Detroit was at their peak, they made mistakes. Like, no one can show me a GM that hasn't made a mistake or hasn't made a couple bad deals here and there. But overall, I think Tree's done exactly what the Flames need him to do. The issue's not upstairs.
Yeah, well, like, it's been apparent for, like, the last couple seasons that the Flames have needed goaltending and better consistency from their defense corps. And he's tried to address that by getting guys like Hamilton, like Kamenik, cycling in guys who are good in terms of the advanced statistics, like Brian Elliott, like Mike Smith, that they didn't pan out, but, you know, or Cam Talbot even. And,
but he put the right guys in the ice.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, well, those guys weren't fitting still. So let's break the bank and go and get the really good top-tier guy in Markstrom and, you know, like, solve that problem for a while now. And, you know, fix the defense core once and for all. And, you know, like, as problems become evident, change it up so that way it's fixed, at least even temporarily. And I think that, like, if the Flames continue to struggle, then I think the next big thing will be shaking up the forward group to reallocate things. And
yeah, and I don't think you fix the forward group through free agency. Like, if I look at the goalies, I'm happy with Markstrom and whoever. That's been solved. If I look at the defensive group, good enough. Even if they're not all performing the way we need them to, Giordano, Anderson, Tanev, Hanifin is a great top four. Add in Valimaki. You know, some guys will be more consistent than others, but the forward group, we have obvious holes, and they're on the right side. So if you need to solve the hole, you're going to have to give some up to do it. You can't just go and sign a bunch of right-wingers.
And by the way, just as a point, Nikita Nesterov, boy, has that been a really good signing by the Flames. He has really been one of the best number six defensemen that I can recall in Flames history for, like, the last 15, 20 years.
I agree. I don't know if he'll be here past this year because I think he could be a guy like a Forbort who looks good and gets bigger money elsewhere. And I think they also want to bring in a younger guy, be that Shillington or someone else next year in that position. But if he's affordable, I'd say bring him back. But I can see this being his reintroduction to the league, and he'll get paid more to go elsewhere.
Yeah. Like, if he plays like this all season, I could see him getting a $2.5, $3 million contract from somebody.
And I don't want to pay him that much. I think he's great, but I don't think he's worth that on this on this roster. That would make him essentially worth half as much as Anderson. I'm not sure we're there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, lineups are a tricky thing. And to answer Ryan's question, if they have to make a move, new coach, new GM, new player, I think we're going to see less coaches fired this year as well, because even coaches, I would imagine you got to go through the bubble. So, I mean, I don't know for sure, but if we fire a coach, we can't just bring a new guy in. He's going to have to quarantine. So now we're 2 weeks with what? With, you know, Huska as our head coach? Like, it's not like you just fire the coach,
honestly,
bring the new
like
guy
if
in.
If the Flames fired the coach, Huska would be the coach. Like,
Yeah, but I don't know what good firing. I think they fired as many coaches as they can fire and as many as they want to pay to go away. I think if they have to make a deal, Ryan, if I pick one of your three options, which is new player, new coach, new GM, I'm going to say Tree will find a way to move one or two players. It's not going to be a good Johnny Gaudreau deal, but if they feel they need to shake up the lineup, he'll find somebody to take a Bennett or something like that.
Yeah, or a Backlund or a whatever. Like, there are plenty of different options to shake it up. And, you know, with the Flames having so many good young guys coming through that could be potentially decent NHLers, it also helps for, like, with this season having so many guys that are kind of fringy, like Simon, Levo, Nordstrom, like all those types of guys. Like, at least the Flames will have legit guys coming up through the system that can fill those spots and be effective even though they're young rookies.
Yeah, I think you'll see a delayed response. I think, well, you know, some of these changes might be made mid-season or the deadline usually.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the deadline is going to be that big this year because you got to wait 2 weeks to get your guy. That's when the playoffs start. So I think you'll see a lot of things that we might normally think of as a deadline move done in the offseason. But I definitely think, looking at this roster, probably two at least, if not three, of the top nine are not Calgary Flames next year. So, Ryan, I think if what you're talking about happens, I think even if they're not 500, they kind of got to ride it out with the roster they've got, the coach they've got, that sort of thing, just because this year sucks. But next year, I think you'll see if they're, especially if they're not at 500 as they keep going, and as we get near the playoffs, there's going to be big moves if this team, I think, underperforms once more.
Yeah, like if this is, like, under normal circumstances, like a 9, 10, 11 team, like, then it's, yeah, you're gonna, like, that's just not acceptable, really.
I mean, like I said, I think you move Gaudreau anyways just to bring somebody in the lineup, but if this team underperforms or doesn't even make it out of the first round, I think Bennett, Backlund, Gaudreau, maybe Monahan, like, I think there's gonna be a significant shift to the forward group in the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, some permutation, one way or the other, but we'll see.
Well, Matt, I think that wraps up the last week of Flames hockey, so it's time to look ahead to the next week of Flames hockey. And we had a busy week last week with four games. We played the prediction game, and once again, I won. It's now 2-0, Dan. It's almost like a Flames game this year. You're getting blown out. I guess maybe...
it's early, but, you know, like some Flames games, you know, the effort won't actually come in the second and third periods, and it'll just be like you blowing.
And unlike Markstrom, we can't say having a shutout's a good thing in this game.
Yeah.
So I thought we would win the first game against Winnipeg and the Edmonton game, which we did. We'd lose Winnipeg 2 and 3, which we did. You thought we'd win all four, so you were a little more optimistic this past week. But going into the next week, we have three games now. We see Winnipeg again. It feels like we've played Winnipeg way too much. And it seems like we've played all blue jerseys to this point. I guess Edmonton's technically orange now, and we had a couple games against Montreal, but it seems like we're getting all the blue jerseys out of the way so we can move on to another color.
Yeah.
We have Winnipeg here in Calgary on the 9th on Tuesday. That'll be an 8 p.m. Start time. Then Thursday and Saturday, we are at Vancouver for both of those, 8 p.m. start time. So Thursday will be the 11th, and then Saturday is a Hockey Night in Canada tilt, 8 p.m. Mountain. So three games in the docket, Matt. What do you think we do?
Win both against Vancouver, lose against Winnipeg.
It's tough to think you're going to win against Winnipeg at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, well, now they're getting Dubois in, and it's just for whatever reason this team is.
And the whole thing is, I don't think Winnipeg's a great team. I think we've been stymied by good goaltending.
It's just, I think that they're just extra motivated from the playoffs last year, and, you know.
I think we're not playing great.
We would have beat you type of attitude.
Yeah, we're not playing great, and we're also, I think, coming up against Hellebuck, who I think elevates that team.
Yeah, because if you take Hellebuck out of the situation, there's not really a ton of difference between them and Ottawa.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. I think they're still
a little bit more than that, but not by a huge amount.
I'm going to say that the Flames snap their one-game winning streak against the Oilers. I think they're going to lose to Winnipeg. I think they're going to lose to Vancouver on Thursday, and I think they'll beat Vancouver on Saturday. They seem to be doing well. They've won every Saturday game thus far. We had one start off against Vancouver 3-0, Montreal 2-0, and then the Oilers 6-4. So I think that we will see them win another Saturday game against Vancouver. Not the week I want, but the week I think we're going to get. What's that old Batman phrase? And he's not the hero we want, but the hero we deserve?
Yes.
I think that's kind of what we're going to see from the Flames this week. Not the week we want, but the week we probably deserve.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, if this team can actually get the secondary players to contribute like they did in the Edmonton game, and like everybody on the forward group contributing more consistently, then, you know, I think that'll go a long way. It's just, unfortunately, to this point, that's been part of the problem.
I think that if we're going to get different guys step up, it's not going to be that Winnipeg game. It'll be the Vancouver games or the Ottawa games.
Yeah. And thankfully, the Flames' schedule over the next while is kind of on the easier-ish side. So
it's on the easier-ish side if you're playing 40 or 60 minutes of a game.
True.
It's on the difficult side if you're playing 20 minutes of a hockey game.
True.
So I think it really depends on how easy the Flames want to make this on themselves.
Yeah, and that's always the question.
It reminds me of that scene in Austin Powers when, what is it, he hits on a 5 or something at blackjack, and he says, "I also like to live dangerously." Like, it almost seems like the Flames are just going into this, you know, wanting to live dangerously and making it deliberately hard on themselves.
Yeah.
All right, well, Matt, I think that's about it for this week. Enjoy these games against, I would say, the Blue Shirts, but that's the Rangers. So Winnipeg and Vancouver and whatever iterations. I don't know who's wearing what jerseys when now. There's so many jerseys in the rotation. But enjoy Winnipeg, enjoy Vancouver, and we'll talk to you on Valentine's Day.
Hopefully that this week upcoming is a little bit more normal Flames hockey instead of the lackluster effort Flames hockey.
But lackluster effort is normal Flames hockey.
Well, usually when they're playing better, those comebacks actually work.
Yeah, but usually that's in the second half of the season. We're not there yet.
True. Well, as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.